When I was about 11 years old, I read The Hobbit, which for me was a great story of dragons and action, and so then picked up The Lord of the Rings to have a read of that, and found that the main character, Bilbo, wasn't even in The Lord of the Rings. And so I got about two chapters in and then put it down as an 11-year-old. I met this beautiful girl, Narelle, though, who instructed me that before we were going to get married, I had to do two things. I had to read The Lord of the Rings, and I had to read the Narnia series. She said it very subtly. She encouraged me. So I tried to read the three books before the first movie came out. And, of course, the movie series has been incredibly popular, made a lot of money, and received 17 Oscars for the series. The last one won the majority of them, but it makes it the most awarded movie, equaled most awarded movie, the final in the series, and certainly the series beats Harry Potter or any of these other ones hands down. And it's an enduringly popular story that's translated well to the big screen, but what many people don't know is what motivated Tolkien in the writing of it. He's one of those writers who didn't write many things. I was able to master his work before today's talk. But he did write to a lot of his fans afterwards, and his letters have been collected together by his son. So we can read what motivated him and some of his thoughts on the action and the events in the story. Here's one of his statements about The Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings is, of course, a fundamentally religious work, unconsciously so at first, but consciously in the revision. The religious element is absorbed into the story and the symbolism. Now, Tolkien was friends with another author in this series, who we'll be coming back to, the guy who wrote the Narnia series, C.S. Lewis. And he was critical of C.S. Lewis and the way that he went about writing his stories, because he didn't see The Lord of the Rings as an allegory, where the characters are meant to represent other characters in the real world. He spoke instead of it being a fairy story, and that in every good story, there is applicability to life. The reason why it resonates with us in our experience, the reason why we love the story, is because it tells us things about the human condition. And just one of those elements of the story, obvious from the name of the first book, The Fellowship of the Ring, is that of friendship. The story revolves around two friends, Frodo and Sam. Sam is his sidekick, and they go on the entire quest together. Even when they leave the rest of the fellowship behind, Sam argues him into letting him come with him. And he fights for him and even risks his own life. Sam risks his own life for the sake of his friend Frodo. And in the story of Jesus, which we have written down in the Bible, in the Gospels, we find out that Jesus also had his sidekicks, his disciples who followed him for a whole 3 years. And we find out that in this group of 12, there's an inner circle of his closest friends, three called James and John and Peter. But even in that, we see something of Jesus' humanity, is that he has a best friend, his closest friend, who's with him all the time, who comes to his most intimate explanations of what God's like, his revelations as he performs amazing deeds. And it's John, the guy who wrote that part of the Bible that Lainey read for us, who's this best friend, who leans against Jesus at the Last Supper in that most intimate of positions as they eat together, and he's the one who's able to ask Jesus quietly who it is that's going to betray him. Jesus was a man with close friends, and his friends are who give us insight into the man's character. Throughout John, this disciple is described as the disciple who Jesus loved. And that's the first reflection that I'd like to share on friendship, that friendship is about love. We see it there in John chapter 15, verse 9. So in this part of the Bible, if you look at verse 9 there, I'm not sure of which line it is, my apologies, but it's the first one. It's the first one there, line 1. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Jesus has spent 3 years with his friends, loving them. And he says that what he has done for them is what God his Father has done for him. Something of what God is like, Father and Son, is what Jesus is like as a friend. Which is why I believe friendship is such a powerful thing in our experience. Why it's something that you find across all cultures and something that continues to capture our imagination. The explanation that Jesus gives here is God is friendship. And you, being made like God, are made to love the self-disclosure of another person to you, as someone loves you and makes themselves known to you. What I didn't find out until I started reading up on Tolkien on Wikipedia was that before he met C.S. Lewis and had a famous set of friendships at university, he had an amazing set of friendships at high school. They called it the Teacup and Barovian Society because they were really naughty and they would smuggle tea into the library and drink tea there, or they would nick off from the campus, kind of like in Dead Poets Society, and read poetry to each other at night while drinking tea. I haven't found whether there's any inspiration for the movie there, but as I read about this group of four, they were very much like the Dead Poets. And they made a pact together that their lives would be about this poetry and proclaiming their truth through this poetry. And then World War I came along, and so all four of them went off to World War I, and three of them went to the Somme, a famous battle in France, including Tolkien, where one of his friends from the Teacup and Bavarian Society wrote this on the night before he was killed. My chief consolation is that if I'm scuppered tonight, there will still be left a member of the great Teacup and Bavarian Society, Barovian Society, to voice what I've dreamed. May you say the things that I have tried to say long after I'm not there to say them, if such be my lot. If Tolkien was formed by his friendship with C.S. Lewis, then I imagine he was even more formed by his friendship with Geoffrey, who passed away at the Somme. They'd made a pact that their lives would be about the truth and proclaiming it through literature, and then the consolation that Geoffrey spoke of before he was killed is that that truth might endure and be proclaimed by Tolkien even better than by himself. When I was 11 years old, if you had asked me honestly what my driving force in life was, it was that I wanted to be popular. I wanted everyone to be my friend, tell me their secrets. And it was about me, of course, because I wanted everyone to think highly of me. But what Jesus reveals to John and what Tolkien had at the heart of his book was friendship about being about the other person. Sam wasn't concerned for himself, he was concerned for Frodo. Jesus wasn't concerned for himself, he was concerned for John and the rest of the 12. Friendship is about the other. That's the first insight that I wanted to share from this conversation Jesus had with his friends. The second is that friendship is about more than just the closed group. Friendship means business. It's about doing something for those outside. Volume 1 of The Lord of the Rings is, of course, called The Fellowship of the Ring. And the Fellowship of the Ring is four hobbits, two humans, one elf, one dwarf, and one wizard, who together make a pact and go on a quest. They're united in the purpose of destroying the one magical ring, the ring that could destroy the earth. And Jesus is very intentional in calling his disciples friends. He says it there in verse 15, which I'll need someone's help to find in terms of the line numbers. It starts with, I no longer call you servants. He explains why he now calls them friends. Can someone tell me what line that's in? What's that? Eight, thank you. I no longer call you servants, line 8, because a servant doesn't know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends, for everything I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. A servant just does what's delegated to them, whereas a friend knows what's on their other friend's heart. Friendship is about disclosure, letting your secrets be known to people who you entrust. A friend can be thought of as a confidant, someone who you confide in. That's according to Jesus. And for Jesus, his master's business, his father's business, was summed up in love. But it wasn't just love of the 12. It wasn't just love of even one ethnicity, the Jews. He had in mind a ever-expanding circle of fellowship. that would expand to the geographical region, but in his vision across the entire world, to capture people from different races and languages and ideologies and nationalities, that they would all be united in one community of love. And Tolkien's little society that were rebels and drank tea had a vision for beyond themselves as well. Tolkien, in corresponding with one of the other friends who survived, put it this way. He said, "The teacup and Barovian society has been granted some spark of fire, certainly as a body, if not singly, that was destined to kindle a new light, to testify to God and truth in a more direct way, even than by laying down its several lives in this war." That was his hope and his consolation when his friend Geoffrey was killed, that somehow this group might testify to God and the truth and kindle a fire that would be greater than anything they could do in World War I. And so he wrote his stories so that they might be applicable and speak to our human experience. I often used friendship secrets to exclude people from my friendships in primary school. When I was year 11, my understanding of friendship was, is you tell me your secrets, and then we have power together to not tell the secrets to this person here who isn't our friend. I don't know if you were as immature as I was when I was 11 years old. But Jesus says that this secret is intended to include the secret that he reveals about God's love and his plans for humanity is supposed to expand across the world. It's for everyone to hear and know, and it's an offer that's on the table for all of us. But he digs deeper into what this secret is in his conversation with John and James and the rest of the 12. And I've got to give you a spoiler alert here, that if you haven't finished watching The Lord of the Rings or you haven't finished reading the book, I'm about to reveal something that happens towards the end, so you might want to block your ears, but hopefully you've had enough time. It was made almost a decade ago, so the books have been written a while ago. At the end of the story, Frodo and Sam make it to Mount Doom, where it's their only hope to destroy this ring of power. And Frodo, the hero of this story, a humble hobbit, he fails. He succumbs to the temptation of the ring, and instead of throwing it into the mountain, he puts it on himself and takes its power. And Sam, standing by, is powerless to do anything to stop this. And at this point, it's providence, something beyond the characters in the story, that steps in and delivers Frodo and delivers the entire world. A not-so-sympathetic character, Gollum, comes and bites off his finger and accidentally falls into the lake of fire. Unconsciously in the writing of this book, but consciously in the revision, Tolkien intended a religious work. And here's his explanation to one of his fans about this final scene. The quest was bound to fail, and did, as far as Frodo considered alone was concerned. He apostatized. But at this point, the salvation of the world and Frodo's own salvation is achieved by a grace. He was saved himself and relieved of his burden. It's grace, providence, a character outside the story who steps in and saves Frodo. And we, of course, all carry a weight of temptation to which we sometimes succumb. All of us are like Frodo, and we will fail. If we are heroes, then we're certainly fallen heroes. And Jesus explains himself to be the friend that all of us need in this situation. He does it there just before line 8. Let's guess at line 6, but see if you can find it. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. If Jesus sees friendship being about love, he sees himself being the ultimate friend because of the ultimate act of love that he did for his friends. He laid down his life. Not like Frodo, just in carrying the weight of temptation, but in actually being cast into the fires of Mount Doom himself, giving his life in order that his friends might survive. If he was in Frodo's position and felt himself unable to destroy the ring, he would have thrown himself into the lava in order to destroy it. And of course, if you keep on reading in John's story, that's what Jesus does. He claims that his life is given in place of those who fail in the face of temptation. So why is The Lord of the Rings so successful as a book and as a movie? Well, Tolkien puts it this way. In talking about fairy stories, he says, if one sets out to address adults, then they won't be pleased, excited, or moved unless the whole, all the incidents, seem to be about something worth considering, more, for example, than mere danger and escape. There must be some relevance to the human situation of all periods. Well, what Tolkien writes is relevant to our experience of friendship, isn't it? We'd all love to have a Samwise Gamgee. We'd all love to have a Fellowship of the Ring. Jesus claims to not just disclose himself, but God who sent him. And he claims to have loved us in the ultimate of ways, meeting our deepest needs. And Jesus shows us why it is that friendship is such an important theme, and a theme that continues to inspire books and movies. He says that God himself is friendship. Two people who have loved each other from eternity, and that we are made like him in order that we might experience and express love. And God confides in us, making us his friends, even at the ultimate cost of his son. And like all friendships, this, of course, is an offer of friendship that calls for a response. So today isn't a one-off talk, it's part of a series. We've got six more talks coming, considering six other authors. Next week we'll be looking at Harry Potter and what Jesus might say to Rowling, who wrote those books. He is a brave man, and what does Jesus have to say about bravery? But you also might like to just pick up this book, which you can find online, John's Biography of Jesus, and read the story through. It won't take that long, and it's a good read, and see what Jesus has to say about what he reveals of God and what God's intentions are for this world. It's a friendship that we're offered and invites us to respond. So there are two ways that you could respond to that. Now, we've got a couple of minutes now for questions, so if anyone